This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good friend Pete at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. And this is our 50th podcast, ladies and gents. So this is a big deal for us. And we thank you ever so much for joining us again. And we're really, really thrilled that you've come back for some more of our antics. And we've got a special guest for you. As it's a special 50th, we thought we'd have a very, very special guest, and we're honoured to have this person with us. And we're not going to tell you who it is just yet, so just bear with us, and we'll be joining us in about 10 to 15 minutes. And I'm sure you'll be absolutely thrilled when you hear who we've got with us. Pete, how are you, fella?
Yeah, all right. Mate, I can't believe we've done 50 podcasts. We only started doing this a couple of months ago.
Well, if only that was true, mate. We've been here for a little while now, but, you know, we've started, as the song goes from Drake, we started from the bottom, now we're here, mate. We've made some progress, given the wind tunnels and all the noise and all the other bits and pieces we had to... We've made a good progress, and I think it's helped with our great sponsors coming on board of ShareScope, SharePad. So, yeah, here we are, mate.
Well, yeah, we were at the bottom, and now we're just slightly above the bottom. There's a long way to go, don't you worry. We'll keep
improving. Always stay humble. You know me, Pete, stay humble, mate. Always progress to be made.
Oh, so true. I just want to say quickly, I don't want to dwell on my health because I'm bored senseless by it myself, and I'm sure listeners are. I had a bit of a relapse sort of last week or whatever. I started feeling a bit rough again. I couldn't understand what was going on, and I was getting a little bit frustrated because my concern was that maybe they haven't found the problem, and that would really be annoying. Turns out they've given me the wrong dose of the drug that I'm taking, so I'm back on the correct dose now. And I've been doing that last 2 days. I feel massively better. So fingers crossed, it looks like the stomach is the problem and they're working on it. And hopefully it will get me better.
Brilliant news, mate. Brilliant news. I mean, I think they're determined just to keep you at home, mate. So you're not creating carnage in the car and drinking too many pubs out of alcohol. I think that's part of what they're going for.
Being too much of a menace. I'll tell you what, it's quite funny, actually, because last Friday... I met up with 6 or 7 investing mates sort of thing. I mean, a couple of them are guys I've known forever through when I used to work at Fujitsu and whatever. But there was another load that I've come good friends with who are people I really met through Twitter, and they came to the Wheelie Bash and all that kind of stuff. And they all sort of like live fairly local or whatever. And, you know, we had such a nice day. It was absolutely brilliant. We were in the pub from sort of like, I don't know, 12:30 or something. I don't think I left till about 8 o'clock. And we just had even though it rained for half the afternoon, we had such a lovely day. And I recommend it to anyone out there. If you know a group of guys or a group of girls who are investors, get with them. And you know, Fridays are pointless looking at your screen all day. Get out, get down the pub, have a good chat with your mates. You probably learn more by doing that and talking to other people. And you certainly enjoy yourself more than anything else you can do.
Agreed, mate. Agreed. And no doubt you end up talking about the markets anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's the whole point. It's like, you know, it's like anything. You meet up with mates and you have chat about this, that, and the other. But you know, we also discussed a lot about the markets. We had some really good conversations. So I'll just say quickly is that if there's anyone out there who is in, you know, the Outer Hebrides or something, and they feel like they don't have any investing mates near them, well, you know, drop me an email, drop me a DM on Twitter, whatever. I'll put out a message on Twitter or something saying, look, there's, you know, whoever it is lives in Botswana or wherever it is. And you know, if there's any mates in that region, get together, have a beer. You know, why not?
That's very, very good of you, mate. Very, very good of you. Now, I want you to start, Pete, this week was talking about the markets, because I think what we had was the conversation back at the end of April, beginning of May, about whether or not we'd be having a sell in May and go away sort of seasonality thing going on, and I don't think that happened last month because the market's actually had a relatively good, although volatile, May, and we ended up closing the month out near enough to and above 7,000.
Did the FTSE actually gain for May? Because I know my own portfolio was down a little bit for May, which really frustrated me because I've been up January, February, March, April, so I was absolutely gutted to not quite have a positive result in May.
It was relatively flat for May, Pete. It was relatively flat for May.
Yeah.
But you know what? It wasn't down, if you know what I mean. This is what we were looking at in the sense of the month. The FTSE roughly about a 1% gain, yeah. When it closed out on Friday, was it Friday the 28th? Was it? I think it was the right date for my brain's working.
Yeah,
well.
That's right. Yeah.
So gain of 1%, which you know was better than people were expecting.
Yeah.
And I think it helped because we've got so many multinational companies that derive their revenues from overseas, and that currency strength helped keeping them in positive. You know, strong pound. So. Yeah, so that was quite good for them. So yeah, so we did okay from May, and then the markets opened once again with those people, you know, adding to the markets in the beginning of the month, and also positive news from overseas and more positive news from the miners. We had the bank holiday, and then Tuesday, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 2nd of June, folks. So yesterday, Tuesday, the markets just went opened ever so fast, Pete. You know, we're above 7,100.
Yeah, dropped back, didn't they?
Came back with a bang, mate. So we've ended up again today. So the FTSE 100 is closed today at 7,108, up 27 points. It touched an intraday low of 7,074 and a high of 7,124. And yesterday and today, another new high on the FTSE 250. Continues to trade very, very strongly. So for anybody out there that's holding some FTSE stocks, I'm sure they did very, very well the last 2 days in the markets and are very, very pleased with the portfolios.
Yeah, it's interesting. I look at the indexes, you know, on a regular basis sort of thing. And FTSE 250, it's just been the strongest index all year, really. Well, apart from the small cap, the FTSE small cap's been absolutely fantastic. But yeah, I mean, they're looking all right. I mean, June can be a weak month in terms of its return, but it's not the kind of month where you get big falls normally. I don't think we're in for any major problems as we go through the summer. It just tends not to happen. So you've got June, July, August, whatever. You know, we'll probably be okay for the summer months. And I just think it's low volumes. People are, you know, doing other things, lost interest on holiday, whatever. I noticed today that yesterday in the morning we had billions of RNSs, and I was like, oh my Lord, is there so many of these to read, you know? But I noticed today there was hardly anything really. And I think that's the normal thing. You just don't get much news.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting couple of months, Pete. The markets, as they say on the... on the big web pages and the big TV companies, is running hot, as they say right now. Everything's hitting highs. And I think if we carry on with this, you know, and inflation concerns kick in and the central banks decide they want to just ease off on their policies, then they're trying to cool the markets off, because obviously there's still all these people that need to go back to work. And jobs that need to be replaced because, you know, lots of people are working flexible hours or reduced their hours, or hybrid working is a theme that I keep seeing trending on various different platforms that I read. So they might want to start cooling things off, Pete, if we get too hot, the markets start running away from themselves, because they've got to return to growth, you know what I mean, at some point. So
yeah,
it'll be very, very interesting going forward.
Just from the sort of sense I'm getting, and certainly what the US Fed is saying, is that they're actually pretty flexible on their interest rate target. So I think the US Fed funds rate, I think, is 2% is the target. They're below that at the moment, obviously. I think they're quite happy to let inflation sort of go higher and not do anything with rates. Because there's a real sort of view that a lot of the inflation is a temporary thing because of mismatches between supply and demand and stuff, you know, because of the effects of COVID, that there's all sorts of weird demand going on that wasn't there before. But also the supply is all completely screwed up and all over the place, you know. So I
Yeah,
think it takes a while for that to settle down, you know.
there's certainly been a lot of infrastructure, supply material costs going up. We talked about lumber last time, building materials, etc. So all of that needs to cool off a little bit. So some of the projects might, might get done whilst all this is going on. I think the interesting thing will be when the major projects that we've muted that we're going to be kicking off in the UK. Whether most of them go ahead, I'm talking about HS2 now, Pete, and all the other stuff. That's all gone very, very quiet of late. So we'll see what happens with that. And we heard that Nissan are going to be building the new Qashqai here. We've heard that, Heinz are going to start building in Wigan to have a plant there to manufacture more ketchup. So lots of stuff going on, mate, to create jobs.
I mean, I was reading somewhere that the inward investment into the UK in recent months is outstripping everywhere, you know, which is the classic thing, isn't it? That, you know, there was that fear that with Brexit and stuff, the investment wouldn't come to the UK, and people were only coming, you know, companies were only coming to the UK because of access to Europe. Looks like that isn't, touch wood, isn't going to be too much of a difficulty.
Well, let's hope so, mate. Keep fingers crossed. Create jobs and get out of lockdown. I'm looking forward to it, mate. Right, Pete. Shall we bring in our guest?
Yeah, why not? Let's bring him on.
Yeah.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Okie dokie. Folks, we have great joy and with great pleasure. We've got the man behind the founder of ShareScope, SharePad. Ionic Information was founded by a gentleman by the name of Martin Stamp in 1997, and we have the great pleasure of having Martin Stamp on this Twin Peaks podcast with us today. Martin, are you there, fella?
I'm there. Hi, Pete, and hi, Peter.
Very,
Hello,
very
how
good of you
you
to join us. How are you today?
I'm very well. I'm at home. I rarely go into the office these days. Most of the developers don't. And we can do most of our business by phone. So, life is a bit boring, but otherwise, it's just fine.
Dokie. Now, Martin, we're absolutely thrilled to have you on here. You've done phenomenally well, haven't you, with this software program? And a little birdie told me that you have a tech background, a bit of a technologist, a programmer of sorts. So is it my understanding that, back in 96, 95, whatever it was, you just got frustrated with what was available software-wise for crunching the numbers and looking at what was available as an investor? What was the reason? Was that the reason why you decided to develop something yourself?
Oh, totally. No, I've been a programmer most of my working life. I've done numerous jobs. I've retired several times, and then the money ran out, as I knew it would, and came back to the workforce. But I've been a programmer, and my key job was with a company called Scion that you probably remember. I was employee number 10 or so, and I stayed with them for 12 years, and I believe I'm the only programmer who asked for equity at the very beginning, so I was given an
Smart
option,
move.
and so that gave me a certain amount of money by the time Scion floated, and I was investing it, and I was looking at the software in order to manage my diversification, and I was simply appalled by the quality of it, to be honest. It was slow, sluggish, lacking in features. And I just thought, yes, I can do better. And so, over a period of about 18 months working from home, I wrote the initial version of ShareScope that just had the LSE shares in it and the FTSE indices, end of day only. And we launched in 97 with one employee. So we had a couple of modems for people to dial up on, because this is essentially pre-internet. It took a while before it took off, but within 9 months, we were motoring away. And of course, this is when the dot-com boom was taking off. So people were enormously interested in tracking the market. And it was fantastic that we could do that, because in 95, so just 2 years before we launched, the LSE wouldn't allow real-time prices onto the market. And there was a legal case that I wasn't involved in, but and the LSE gave in gracefully in the end and realized that actually it was the future and it was a really, really good thing. So to get this sort of information out to regular investors was just so exciting that they didn't have to rely on their stockbroker, that they could analyze the markets themselves and do what they wanted themselves. And I had lots of things that I wanted. And so I programmed them in. And then obviously within a year or two, we started hiring some more programmers and getting a decent number of people. So I didn't have to be on call 24/7 to keep the whole thing running.
That is.
Martin, that's interesting because did you say sort of 95, 96, you kicked things off?
I kicked things off in probably the beginning of 96, yeah. It took me about 18 months to write version one of Chesco.
Because
And
I
that code
think.
is still there, I might say. Some of it's gone, but a lot of it is core code, it's still there.
Wow. Because I think I sort of tripped over ShareScope probably, I would say probably sort of 2001, 2002. The
Right.
point is, by that stage, it was already pretty feature rich and an impressive product. So in those few years, you'd gone from, FTSE 100 and FTSE 250 end of day price, and that's about it. You'd obviously progressed it a lot in that time.
Oh yes, we worked very hard. We it was I don't know. Yes, I mean I was programming in those days a lot, we had a brilliant programmer called Tim from Australia. And between us, we just ripped through things, and
Wow.
we could release new versions over the modem, which was something of an innovation. So we didn't have to send out disks to everybody. I mean, the fundamental data used to come in once a week by motorbike courier on a CD. I mean, it was just so primitive by comparison with today. Yes, we were going, and then within I think 18 months. We got our first award, and I think that's what really cemented it for us. People realized we were a real contender, and we were going up against some decent sized companies with quite a lot of customers. I mean, one of those was a subsidiary of Mitsubishi Electric, and I remember someone saying to me, "Oh, they've got deep pockets," and I said back, "Well, yes, but they can cut a failing company in the blink of an eyelid. Once they decide it's not going to make it, they'll just cut it." Indeed, that particular company disappeared, I think, two years after we started. And I'm sure we weren't the only reason for that, but I'm sure we contributed to it.
I mean, the amazing thing for me, Martin, is that ShareScope, SharePad, over the past 20 years or so, have received over 50 awards. So that first award that you got has just carried on and carried on and carried on since then. And I had the privilege of coming to one of your awards ceremonies last year. Was it last year? I think it was a year before last. And you've won again for the Investors Chronicle FT Awards. You guys haven't stopped winning.
Yeah, well, what can I say?
I think
We
what you can say, I mean, the main thing for me is that you clearly have a passion for keep evolving and keep improving because you're an investor yourself and you want to have something that is rich and usable and fast of use for somebody else to get the information they want. You don't want something that's you're waiting around for it, so you're always innovating.
No, I think it's terribly important to keep moving forwards, and one of the key challenges is to keep the user interface, awful term, but we know what's meant by it, to keep it as simple as possible. And in a way, SharePad is a good place to reevaluate everything and get everything that is really needed into the product and lose some of those features that perhaps were not as useful. But one of the key things is usability. I think it's incredibly important that it is responsive. I think it's incredibly important that you've got the tools and that they are layered in a way. So you've got the most obvious thing. So if you want to do a trend line, let's say, that's very, very easy to get to. If you want to do something a bit more complicated, a MACD or something, then you have to dig a little bit deeper. And, you know, if you want to look at synthetic data, that's a little bit deeper still. You know, so there are all these different features, and we try to keep it so that when you start using the product, you can find your way around it. And that is nevertheless, I would acknowledge that it is a challenge, but it is not that hard to get around it. We have telephone support, and I do, you know, encourage people to pick up the phone. That's what they're there for. We're paying people to answer those calls, and it's hugely useful, I think, so often to speak to a human and get an immediate thing. I can't do this. And to have that explained to you by a person is just magnificent compared to trying to describe it in an email or something like that. You're in front of the computer. You can do what they're telling you there and then, or even they can log on to your machine and show you how to do something. It's just magnificent and so much easier than most applications. I remember back an early review we got in PC World, a computer magazine. Somebody wrote a letter saying that we were the best Windows software they'd ever used, which I thought was very nice.
That just confirms it. I mean, we're going back to the 50 awards in 20 years. Those awards are voted for by readers using the software. So you're voting for the best software that you use, best investment software, and they're voting for ShareScope, SharePad over and over and over again. And then I'm going back to 2015, Martin, you were honoured with the coveted Editor's Award for services to private investors from the FT and Investors Chronicles. That tells you what you've done for the community. You've enriched them with knowledge and been able to track their portfolios and know what's going on and enhance their portfolio value, no doubt.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I was very, very pleased to get that award. I must admit, I didn't expect it at all, but it was hugely gratifying. Yeah, and the ability to analyze PE, to analyze PEG, to analyze, you know, CAPE, that just wasn't there when we started. And to do it simply and accurately is terribly important. And to track your portfolio, you know, is today a champagne day or is it a let's hold back a little bit day? You know, I think that's brilliant. To deal with all the data effectively and things like that, so you're getting reliable valuations on your portfolio, it's just spectacular. So, you know, from my point of view, I think one of the key things is education, is trying to help people to understand what investing is all about, how you can go about doing better than having an advisor. You know, an advisor will cost you between 1 and 1.5% typically of your wealth every single year.
Which is quite a lot with some people, isn't it?
Sorry?
Which is going to be quite a large sum of money with some people.
Over a period of several years, that is actually an awful lot of money. I don't get really why people do that, especially as, you know, generally speaking, the funds and so on don't outperform the market as a whole. So you've got to pick the right advisor. You've got to pick the right unit trust if you're going that route, or ETF, so you've still got to use judgment. But after that, you're passing it on to somebody else, and you know, perhaps enables you to sleep well. I mean, there are people who should use professionals, there's no doubt about it. But from my point of view, I think there are many, many more people who would benefit from using a program like ShareScope or SharePad.
Yeah, we've had this discussion on the podcast, I think, where. But one of the things that I've noticed over time, I know some really experienced investors, but even they are not very good at pulling the trigger on an investment. So they'll look at a particular stock or whatever for ages and ages. They really like it. It's almost like they need the sort of confirmation from someone else to say, yeah, you should buy that share. Then they'll buy it. And there's a lot of people like that. It's actually a lot more common than perhaps we'd think, I reckon.
Yeah, it is hard to pull the trigger because you're taking responsibility. But if you have someone else, you're just passing that the buck, as it were. And, you know, that decision is quite important. And a lot of the advisors, some of them, a stockbroker, for example, you know, they're essentially a salesman. Their job is to get you to invest. Their job is not to understand the market. I used to, when I was younger and brasher, I used to sometimes ask these people, you know, what the alpha or the beta was of a stock. And of course, they had no idea what I was talking about. Yeah. But that is actually cruel, frankly. It's not a nice thing to do. But they are not investment professionals in the real sense of being analysts or understanding how the stock market works in any deep way at all. They are told what stocks to push. And, you know, I know this partly because my father was a stockbroker. He started in the 60s when he was in the army, and then when he left the army, he needed some income, and he became a stockbroker. And I only discovered much later that he really hated it, which makes it somewhat ironic. Yeah. I'm a sort of involved in that area, but I think what he hated was the fact that he was a salesman, and that wasn't really him. His idea was really help people, and they wanted turnover shares, because that's how stockbrokers in those days made all their money. Every time you traded, they got 1.5% fixed commission, and if you didn't have a trade, so you go out of Shell into BP, that's good. But if you just stay in Shell, the stockbroker makes nothing. I believe he ended up at Citi after many takeovers. He started with a very small company. And I believe he was the lowest performing stockbroker in his last year, which I'm bizarrely slightly proud of.
he was being too nice, obviously.
I'd say he's being too nice, yes. Yeah. So I grew up with Investors Chronicles around the house. In fact, I didn't read them. I was a fairly normal kid, really.
When did you get interested in stocks? Because you mentioned about Scion and your options. Did you have much experience and sort of interest in the stock market, you know, before you left Scion or whatever? When
Not
did it
really,
start?
No.
Wow.
When I was about 10, I bought two shares. One was Broken Hill Proprietary, which I've always thought was the most brilliant name, BHP. And the other was the Unit Trust, I don't remember. And my father advised on these. And indeed, BHP did very well for me. And the other one, I can't remember, I sold at some point. But after that, I didn't have the resources. You know, you're buying a house and paying a mortgage and that sort of thing. I didn't.
You must have had a massive learning curve to go from not really knowing that much about it to suddenly be in a position where you're writing the software and stuff. I mean, that's incredible.
Yes, I suppose so. To be honest, what I did was I read the Investors Chronicle every week, more or less cover to cover sort of thing. And when I came to a difficult bit, instead of skipping it, which one tends to do, and I understand that, I would go back over it and try and work out what they were really saying. The analysis of PE or PEG or whatever, I would think it through and try and really get to the bottom of why that was being proposed and what it was really meaning. Because some of the concepts are really good. I like the PEG concept, and I like diversification, let's say. I think diversification is one of the most brilliant ideas. But something called cost price averaging, which I don't know if you'll cover that, where you buy a little bit each month, frankly, it's neither here nor there. It might well generate more.
That's interesting.
For a stockbroker.
That's interesting, because I get a lot of stick for this on Twitter, because I'm always saying I'm not a big fan of dripping money in every month to a fund. I just think it's a sort of very passive, inactive, not taking charge of your money kind of way of doing things. I can sort of understand why people do it. But what strikes me is that you're going to be, you're going to be buying a lot of shares, you know, a lot of units of a fund cheap when the markets are low. But like for now, for instance, you know, there's going to be a lot of people buying tech stocks now because they're on a monthly drip feed, and it might not be the best time, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, especially if you've got the money, you know, if you have got a lump sum, you've inherited some money or something like that, then, you know, to drip feed it into the market really doesn't make much sense. Either you're going to go in or you're not. You might as well take your chances. Drip feeding it in will increase the charges slightly, which is probably not that significant, but nevertheless it will. And it won't make much difference to your performance. If you know, if you did an analysis of drip feeding in and just jumping in over a 5-year period, I don't think it would make any difference to the results. And you'd have more money in the market. And the markets have done well. You know, they did incredibly well, let us say, between the Second World War and 95.
I don't remember the Second World War.
Yeah. Oh, well, I remember rationing. Only just. Sorry. I'm not that old. But the markets did you know, very, very nicely. And the odd thing to my mind is that they actually slowed down from 95 to today. Even though we're making humongous progress in terms of technology, the internet, with CRISPR, DNA analysis, and gene editing, and all that sort of thing, it seems to me that we're running faster and faster, and yet the markets aren't reflecting that.
Is that true for the US?
It's less true. It is less true of the US, yes.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is really because the FANGs, the big tech companies, are quoted. And we don't have the equivalent of that in the UK. Arm was sold off, which is a great shame. Sion, unfortunately, died. You know, they got into the FTSE 100 for 3 months, way after I'd left. And then from then on, it was all downhill, unfortunately. So there are no big tech companies really here. And I think that's part of the reason.
Yeah. Martin, it's interesting you say about the valuations of stocks and all the rest of it. I saw an interesting infographic yesterday, and it was showing the sheer volume of global stocks, so global stocks around the world. And they had a combined valuation nearing a milestone near $120 trillion.
Yeah.
So that's how far they've come from, you know, the Second World War, the .com and all the rest of it. They had that dip, didn't they, in 2008, now when you had the financial crisis as well. And we're nearing 120 trillion. I'm not sure if that includes the cryptos, hopefully not. But yeah, that's where the stocks are at the minute. So we have come a very, very long way. What I wanted to ask you before we go is, are you, you've got a passion for stocks, you've got a passion for the software, you're constantly trying to improve it. The readers love it. So the users love it because they're voting for you to win awards over and over again. Are you still an investor, Martin? Because I know you've got a massive collection of Investors Chronicle magazine and Shares magazine still to this day. And you're still, you know, probably a subscriber. Do you still have stocks in your portfolio, and do you have any stocks that you've purchased and kept for a long time?
I do have stocks, but I'm not active in that area. What I found is that running the business actually took up my time and energy, and I felt it was more useful for me to put my energy into that. So I do have some stocks, but there's none that I would be particularly proud of. I mean, I've had some successes, I've had some failures.
We all have.
The biggest successes, though, were in companies that I happen to know something on the inside, as it were. You know, like in Sion is an example.
Are you sure you want to say that publicly, Mike?
No, we're talking about working within the company. I understand what you mean by Sion. Yes, I get that.
I in general, I've been successful, but that's not where I'm putting my energy. So I haven't got a very active portfolio at the moment.
Let me ask you a slightly different question then. Given that you're aware of what's going on in the market, I know you keep a close eye on the news. There's lots of talk at the minute about inflation. Pete and I have spoke about, you know, material supply chain costs going up and this, that and the other, and construction going to be impacted on it. Have you got any thoughts on inflation, Martin? Is it a transitory thing? Is it, you know, transient thing? What's your thoughts on it? Where do you think it's going to go?
It's hugely difficult. I mean, when they did quantitative easing, what's the quote they used to say is it doesn't work in theory, but it works in practice. The economists don't really know what the hell is going on.
Don't really know, yeah.
I'm glad that they are a little more humble, if you like, nowadays. But, you know, we're all doing it. And it doesn't seem to be generating inflation, really. I just remember in the 80s when, you know, we were absolutely determined to rid the country and the world of inflation. And a lot of pain was involved in that attempt. And I seriously hope that it doesn't come back. But at the moment, I really don't know. I think the answer is it is certainly worth keeping a beady eye on. The markets themselves are indicating that it's not going to come back. If you look at the gilt yields, you can do a calculation that shows what the market thinks inflation is going to be in a year's time, in 2 years' time. And that certainly is showing the inflation going up a little bit, but not that dramatically. And, you know, it's not inflation that actually worries me. It's interest rates. If interest rates start going up, you could get a lot of householders, let's say, in trouble.
It's more the reaction of the central banks. It's like the policy response is more the concern than the actual inflation, you think?
Yes.
I guess.
They are determined to keep both inflation down and growth up, which is a good thing, I think. And hopefully we are more sophisticated than we were in the 80s, let's say. But nobody really, really understands this. It's easy to explain things with benefit of hindsight, but to predict the future, I think, is hugely hard. And inflation could become, I do believe, a major concern in the future.
Wow. Martin, a question I've got for you, and I'd like to give my own thoughts on it after you've spoken or whatever. What do you see as the benefits to a private investor of using share pattern? I suppose we could also say to a trader, because it's very much for short-term trading as well with the share scope product, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, let's deal with investors to start with. I mean, the ability to track your investments on a daily basis and, you know, work out CGT when the time comes, but also to analyze the market, to understand the market. I remember when I started this, it felt like there was a room full of all sorts of exciting things, but the door was closed and locked, and I could look through the keyhole, and I could just peer out, see little individual things one at a time, sort of. And I wanted to open the, you know, blow open the door and reveal all the different tools, all the different analysis possibilities that were available to professionals and make them available to regular investors. And that's my passion, is to give the power to the regular investor. To understand, you know, what PE and what PEG mean, you know, by actual practice. Look at companies a year ago and see, well, what was their PE a year ago? That was very high. Has the growth justified that PE? Because the only reason to have a high PE is because you're expecting growth. And if you don't get that growth, it can be very painful because they go, well, they say X growth. And then not only does the share price not go up, but it suddenly doesn't expect as much growth in the future. And that can seriously damage the share price.
You get the PE contraction sort of thing, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So you might have a PE of 40 or something, and the company disappoints, and that PE of 40 can drop back to like 15 or something.
Yeah. And then
that's a nightmare.
Share prices,
takes the share price with it. Yeah, I see that often. So happens so often, Pete.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite is true as well, isn't it? You ideally you want companies that are going to grow well and where the PE will expand as well, and that's how you get the really big growers, isn't it?
Yeah, but have you? I don't know whether you guys have ever answered the question, why didn't you invest in Google and Amazon?
Oh, shut up. Well, okay, we better get rid of him now.
I wouldn't have asked the question if I had, but I always thought they were great companies, but I always thought that the PE was just too ridiculously high. And, I was wrong, you know. It's one of the learnings that I've certainly had is that you learn from your mistakes, you don't learn from your successes. When things go wrong, really analyze those. Don't try and have a success and say, how can I replicate that success? I don't think that's a recipe for good investing. But when it goes wrong, What was your decision? Why was your decision wrong? How can you, you know, hedge against that, you know, minimize the chance of that going forwards?
You're talking about trying to sort of not eliminate, but try to reduce the impact of problems, basically. So it's almost like, don't worry so much about the upside, but focus on the downside and where it's going wrong.
That's my personal approach, absolutely.
What I do, yeah.
An example would be, you know, AIM is a terrible place to invest in as a whole. So if you know a particular AIM stock that is, you know, you're particularly, you know, keen on, fine. But in general, you're fishing where the piranha are. I mean, this is very hairy stuff. Should be done with a great deal of caution. Penny stocks as well tend not to do well. And the interesting time about penny stocks is the only time they've done well is in year 2000 and in 2007. In other words, just before a crash. Things were getting so frothy that even the AIM stocks were doing actually very well. People were leveraging up and things like that. I love the concept that was floated. I think the only place I came across this was in Shares magazine. Someone wrote an article talking about diversification.
We've seen that, yeah.
And you just think, you know, this is bonkers. And it turned out that was, you know, that was really at the peak of the hysteria. And from then on, it was all downhill. And you just think, you made these five investments. You know, two of them had done well. But you didn't never really like those other three. So you should have just focused on the ones you really believed in. But that's hindsight talking. Don't be blinded by that sort of thing. Diversification is a really good idea.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. No. What do you see as the benefits for traders then, Martin?
For traders, well, we've got all the technical analysis tools. And what we find is that, you know, like 80% of our users are really interested in fundamentals and 80% are interested in technicals. And obviously, there's an overlap. A lot of people are interested in both technicals and TA. And to have both, you know, a really full package of TA tools, you know, from point and figure to MACD to anything else.
One of the things that's always struck me is that, I mean, I have a sort of fascination by technical analysis, but over time, I've tried to simplify what I do and be much more simple about it. But I must say, you know, the potential features in terms of what different things you can do on ShareSpad and ShareScope are just immense. It's just like, I mean, I can't imagine there's any more that's not on there, you know?
Yes, I mean, we've covered all the major ones. We listen to our customers, and if there is really demand for something. The one thing we haven't put on is any astrological stuff.
Yeah.
Which part of me would like to, just to see that it doesn't work, sort of thing. But,
prove it doesn't work.
Package with astrology, honestly.
I was going to say that I think it reminds me a bit, in a way, that the way I approach it, it reminds me of Microsoft Excel a bit. It's like I use Microsoft Excel, but I probably don't even use 0.5% of its features. You know, I just absolutely skim the surface of what it's capable of. And I think in reality, that's what I tend to do with ShearPad. I've used ShareScope for probably 20 years now, a long time. And I used ShareScope all that time. And then obviously you created ShearPad, which is the more sort of like, with ShareScope, you had to download a database every night, which took 10, 15 minutes, whatever, for the end of day one, not the real time one. But I switched to ShearPad because I liked, in a way, it's sort of simpler and it was more sort of simple for me as a sort of long-term investor who wants things basic and simple. But what I also liked about it is the fact that it's always online, so you don't have to download the database. That was a massive, massive improvement. But I think the thing that I really like about ShearPad, and it was the same with ShareScope, I sort of see it as a workbench. It's like every day, well, every evening, that is my go-to workbench, where everything I wanted about the markets is there, everything I want to know about an individual stock is there. And it's like some of the information I could probably get for free off of various websites and whatever, but you've got to know what these websites are. You've got to trawl through loads of stuff. And to be honest, it's incredibly inefficient. For me, it's an efficiency thing. I can get onto SharePad, bam, bam, bam. I've got what I've seen, what I want to know. And it's very simple. I love that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And I do, so I'll just say quickly, I do know that a lot of people I know who use it like the filtering capability.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use it that often. I have used it a few times, but that is very powerful. It really is.
Yeah, there's another feature that I suspect a lot of people aren't aware of in SharePad, and that is that if you go over the top of a column and right-click, down there's column statistics. So you could bring up, for example, the PE for the 350, and you can say, what's the average?
I didn't know that.
You didn't? Yeah, well,
thank you. That's
you
you got the average, weighted average, median value, minimum value, maximum value, number in the list, number included, because some of them, I'm looking at PE at the moment, because some of them don't have a PE for whatever reason. That's very useful. We are offering one-to-one sessions where people go through SharePad or ShareScope. If you ring support, I think you should be able to book a slot. We find that people really get a lot from that very often, that they just don't realize there are things that they would find useful if only they knew they were there.
That's a really good feature as well, Martin. I think having those one-to-ones, as you said earlier, it really enhances the speed of learning as well, hands-on, one-to-one. It's really, really, really good to have that. I think the benefit of it as well is that when you get a new, well, I call it a new toy, because it's like you're like a kid in a candy shop, and I'm a big information junkie, a bit like Pete. I want to know the ins and outs of it, you know, as Pete would say, all the information about the company. So the more I can get, the more I feel comfortable with making that big investment into that company, you know? So, yeah, so that's a great feature to have, I think, having that one-to-one. Pete, have you got one more question for Martin that we're going to let him go?
No, I think that covers most of the things I had in mind. I mean, I just want to say thank you for coming on, Martin. It's been extremely useful and very interesting to hear the history of ShareScope and SharePad.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me. I think we have a great future ahead of us. We want to keep serving, our members, our subscribers, and giving them a really good service at a good price. Keep that rolling. So thanks very much.
I mean, one parting thing I was going to say to you, Martin, before you go, is that Pete and I have got a few ideas for some other things we can do with your users and your subscribers to ShareScope, SharePad. So we'll be having a chat with you at another time about that.
Okay, that'd be great.
All right. Thank you ever so much for coming on, Martin. Really, really appreciate your time and your candor, and thank you for sharing all those insights with us.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
guys.
Martin.
All right, thank you. Wow, Pete, what do you think of that, mate?
Oh, awesome. It was really interesting to get not just his views on the products and stuff, but also things like the inflation and some other things like the monthly drip feed stuff. You know, it's great. You know, it's just interesting getting different views on things. And you know, I've never had that kind of conversation with mine before, so that's just brilliant.
You're pleased about the drip feed thing because you found someone else that agrees with you, Pete. Let's be honest. Yeah. The vast majority of people on social media do not agree with you about drip feed. Pound cost averaging works for some people, Pete. It doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, that's it. It's all the courses, isn't it? It's what you're happy with. Hey, do you want to talk about some stocks?
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Let's talk about some stocks, mate. I've got two that I'm going to tell you about very briefly. You can go ahead and start if you want.
I'll tell you what, I was just thinking there might be a quick bit of housekeeping to do. So that's things like if people hit the subscribe button on their podcast platform, it's free to do that. You'll be alerted when a new podcast comes along. So that's worth knowing. Do you want to tell about a charity, Pete?
Yeah. You ladies and gents have been absolutely phenomenal. As always, if you're a new listener to the Twin Peaks podcast, wherever you're listening from, wherever you are in the world, thank you for keeping on this channel and listening to us. We have, of course, have started a few months back raising money for a charity, and that charity is called the Memphis Charity, and they are based in Leicestershire and they support disabled children and their carers. We started it with an initial target of raising £2,500, and we'd used that target because we've been averaging all there or thereabouts 2,500 listeners. And Pete and I's view was, if we can get a pound from, or a euro or a dollar from each of yous to donate, then we'd absolutely smash that target, you know, and raise for a much needed cause. So far, we've got less than 80 of our listeners who've supported us on this cause. But the ones that have supported us extremely well. And the total we're sitting on at the moment is £3,234. And that's less of gift aid that we've got raised so far. And I have some really, really amazing news, guys, because today I was informed by the charity, and they put a tweet out that they were given an award from the Queen's Award for Voluntary Services. So this is the equivalent of the MBE for services to the voluntary services. Yeah, Memphis Charity won that award. 51 years they've been running and supporting disabled children, their families and carers in the community of Leicestershire and further afield. And they were awarded that award, I think it was yesterday, but they announced it today to the community. So I'm absolutely, absolutely thrilled for them because they've been working so hard for that. And I'd like to say thank you guys and ladies and gents for supporting Pete and I with the Twin Peaks Challenge, because I'm sure, you know, that's helped as well to get their name out there regarding what you're doing. The challenge isn't over yet. We're looking to hit £5,000 as our new target. And as I've just said, we're over 3,000 already. We keep pushing on. We're going to run this till December. So if you're still thinking about it, please, please, please make a donation to the charity appeal. You can find it on Pete's webpage, my webpage at conquers3.com. And the Just Giving page, direct page, is justgiving.com/fundraising/Twin Peaks Challenge. Thank you, ladies and gents.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for your donations. As you've obviously realised, we have sponsorship from SharePad and ShareScope. If you fancy using the software yourself, you can get 1 month's free data to either ShareScope or SharePad, whichever you want. If you go to their website, which I think is www.sharescope.co.uk or sharepad.co.uk, go to the subscribe page and you'll find in there there's a box for promo code. Yeah, it's like a promo code box. If you try type in the words Twin Peaks, and I think it's all one word, Twin Peaks in lowercase, then that will get you the 1 month of free data on it. And obviously we get a little drink for that. So thank you very much.
Pete, I forgot to mention this. There's one chap called Northy who complimented you here. So I'm going to have to go back to the charities bit very briefly.
Complimented me?
Yeah, yeah. Because no, I can't miss it out, can I?
I don't believe it. I only get abuse.
Yeah. There you go. Enjoy your rambling circuitous podcast and Pete's one vain attempts to bring Pete 2 on topic and actually talk about some shares. Jokes are awful. Another plus. Good luck fundraising for the charity. That was from Northy.
Oh, dear. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, and Elric again has been donating. So I think Elric's probably on about £700 he's donated so far. So he's been absolutely phenomenal. We'll have to give him a special treat when we see him at a pub or a meal. Take him out for a meal at some point. Pete, to the markets, mate. Tell us what's been going on.
Well, stock-wise, I mean, one that I'll talk about that I hold, that it's an interesting situation. I've talked about it on the podcast before, and that's Pets at Home, yeah, Pets. It came out results the other day, and since the results, it's just sort of slid, which, you know, is a little bit disappointing. But the thing that I think the market is missing and people are missing, and it's more of a sort of general point. I know a lot of people do their investing by looking at the balance sheet, looking at the profit and loss and obsessing over those and whatever, which is fine. That's what you want to do. But I sometimes think there's a sort of wider view that can be taken, which needs to sort of look at the strategy and the strategic direction and look at the things they're actually doing that are going to make a difference and that are going to improve the balance sheet and improve the profit and loss account and obviously drive the growth. And one of the things that really strikes me about Pets at Home, I think, you know, you've often heard this sort of expression about destination retailer and the sort of, you know, the future of retail and things like that. And, you know, it's just not good enough now just to have a shop with a load of shelves in it and a load of product on it and you've got a till. You know, it's just not, it just doesn't cut it in whatever century we're in. And the thing that impressed me about Pets in their latest update and stuff was how they're trying to make it more of an experience. So it's like you go to a Pets at Home place and you can do all sorts of things like dog train. I think they said they run dog training classes and they've got this thing called the Kitten Club and the Puppy Club. So when someone gets a new kitten or a new puppy, they sign up to this club sort of thing. And they can get special offers and whatever, but they also like get invited along to like dog obedience and things like that. And I think it's this whole experiential thing and making it more than just products on shelves. And I think, you know, as well as the omnichannel, because they're very much into, you know, everything's online and you can buy stuff online, but you can also use click and collect and everything is sort of integrated together with one view for the customer. It doesn't matter if the customer buys it in the shop or orders it online, whatever. It's all seamless and integrated. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Pete, you were spot on regarding Pets when we mentioned it some time ago. The share price, since you've spoken about it, though, has doubled, mate. It's gone from sub £2 to nearly £5. It hit a peak of £4.88 just last month. So I think, if anything, the reason why it's probably just having a bit of a pause is because it's come up over 100% and
it's
more.
And
people are either taking profits and looking for things that are slightly cheaper, or they're concerned about the fact that, you know, the lockdown and the freedoms are going to be opening up and people are going to be returning to work. Does that mean that less people are going to be purchasing pets? Or does it mean that some people are going to give pets back to other people, you know, and so on and so on and so forth? So I think, you know, it's had a really good strong run. And sometimes people have to then decide whether to take profits or not. And are they doing that now? Are they waiting for the next massive news? Because the news, as you say, wasn't that bad. But if you bought it at £2 and you got out at £4.88 or £4.50, that's not a bad return for 12 months, really, Pete.
No, you're pretty happy. I mean, you know, as we've discussed many times, I take the view these days that I just want to be in good companies that I can see potential for good growth and I just want to sit on them. And that's very much what I'm doing with Pets. And, you know, I'll take a bit of downside in the short term, but I think longer term, I think the prospects for Pets are really looking good. There was an interesting comment in their update as well that they said that they use the word like step change. There's been a step change in a number of animals in the country, so companion animals. So that's like, you know, like your cats and your dogs and your bunnies and whatever. And it's like, they sort of said that, for, I think they said that like a long time, like a decade or something, the pet market has been static. But because of lockdown and whatever, and because of more working from home, people are getting animals. And that has caused a big jump in the number of animals in the country. And that, you know, that is a trend that's going to keep going. And so I think that's a powerful trend. The other thing that's it's very much to do with it is about humanization of pets and premiumization. So the humanization is this thing where, you know, the dog, the cat is one of the family, especially the dog. I mean, you know, I've said it a million times. There's, you know, a lot of people would rather see their kids go out the house than see the dog go, you know.
That's so true with some people I know, mate, honestly.
Oh, I just think, you know, yeah. I just think if hard times come and someone had to go, it wouldn't be Rover going, you know. He'd be very happy sat
so
there.
So many people
sofa.
Like that, mate. Yeah, oh. Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's the premiumization that, you know, I was thinking, right, when I was a kid and we had dogs and you used to get the mongrel from there was given away or whatever, and you know, you used to just feed it scraps from the dinner table and it would get a tin of Powell every night or something, you know. Like now, it's all, you know, specialist, expensive foods. They're even doing like insect-based foods and all sorts of stuff, you know. And that's a massive market, how that's growing, you know.
Yeah, and the margins are absolutely fantastic on that as well, Pete, yeah. Pete, I want you to talk about a stock that's absolutely flying off the shelves, as to use a pun. Wow. And that was the data coming out today on Bloomsbury. They still call it the Harry Potter publisher, although, you know, Harry Potter's not been published for a few years, I don't think. But Bloomsbury, I think it ended up today closing up 11%, Pete. 11%,
wow.
Yeah. 3.44. So this was a stock that was sub £2 last year. Closing up at 3.44. The data that came out today was absolutely phenomenal. What we're looking at here now. Results for the year beat estimates at every level, with sales up 14% to a record 185.1 million and pre-tax profits lifted by 22% to 19.2 million. Now, obviously, it's benefited from lockdown. People haven't been going away. So people have been purchasing books online. Yeah, and then digesting them at home and so on and so on and so forth. So they've had an absolutely phenomenal year. Chief Executive Nigel Newton commented, "The popularity of reading has been a ray of sunshine in an otherwise very dark year. These results are ahead of expectations and represent our third upgrade this year. These performances demonstrate the strength and resilience of our strategy of publishing for both the general and academic market." So there you go, mate. Absolutely, you know. Nice dividend payer as well, by the way, Pete.
Yeah, there was something I noticed in that results as well, as it actually says in the thing, not only is this the third time we've upgraded our profit expectations for this year, they actually said that the expectations going forward for 2022, they've actually raised those as well.
Yeah, they're in a very, very strong position now, mate. And I think a lot of people have cottoned on to it. It's a stock that I used to hold. I don't hold it any longer. I sold it in the debris of last year when all the markets were getting absolutely spanked. And I didn't have the resilience to go back and buy it back when it went below £2, which I should have done. But we can't get it right all the time, folks. So, yeah, to those that are holding the stock, bravo, well done. Congratulations. I'm very, very pleased for you.
I'd keep holding it. I said it this morning on Twitter. I think it's probably more upside there. And I think the thing is,
yeah.
I think the thing is, it's not just the fact that they've had the sort of advantages of lockdown, whatever, has got more people reading. I think they've done a lot right over recent years. You know, the move to more academic publishing and stuff. And you mentioned the Harry Potter. I'm pretty sure what they do with Harry Potter now. Yeah, maybe that J.K. Rowling or whatever is not writing any fresh material, but that they're very good at sort of, you know, making new sort of variants of it. Do you know what I mean? They're brilliant at that kind of stuff. So I think they're pretty switched on management.
They are, Pete. And this is the beauty of having great management. They've rewarded their staff. They've rewarded the investors. They increased the final dividend by 10%. to 7.58 pence, and they also propose a dividend of 9.78 pence. So if you were buying
a special dividend
of 9.78 pence. So if you'd bought that sub £2, you're getting right now, not only have you had the 100% increase, but you've got almost a 10% dividend back. No, you've got 17 pence almost there, Pete. You with me?
Lovely.
So that's awesome if you had the the courage and conviction to purchase back at when it was below £2. What's your have you got another stock there, Pete?
Yeah, well, I'll just throw in two names very fast. That's Made.com and Victoria Plumbing. Now, I have no idea if there's value in these things. I know nothing about them, but the point is they're both coming up for IPO. So that's just something to make people aware of. The one that I was going to mention is, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's the Epic, the ticker is PMP, and it's Port Merion.
We spoke about Port Merion only recently, Pete, and this was going back when we were talking about our first live event, when we were talking about Port Merion that day, and I think it was South Korea had spanked them and they'd got a profit warning, remember?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that's what we were speaking about just recently.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's interesting because I think from memory, I mean, I picked up on it again the other day. I know a few people who are very good investors who are in it, and that always gets me interested. It's one where it's a long way off its pre-pandemic highs, but it's the kind of company that's it's a bit like Sanderson, you know, with the wallpapers and stuff. I don't know what that's called this week. But, yeah, Sanderson, isn't it?
Sanderson Design Group.
Yeah, SND. Used to be Walker Green Bank, WGB.
SDG, Pete.
SEG, is it?
Oh. Sierra Delta Golf, Pete.
Sorry, SDG. So Port Merion's a sort of similar thing. It's got, like, you know, designs that are from like 300 years ago or something. I mean, talk about an enduring brand, you know. And I think as we see things open up and whatever, I think there's a fair chance that share price can probably recover. I don't hold it, but it's certainly a sort of company that I'd be considering to buy.
Okie dokie. We're running out of time, so I'm going to quickly just tell you about these stocks. And this goes back to me timestamping my purchases for the transparency to my followers. I had a conversation last week about why I do that. I'm not going to go over it again. And one of the ones I timestamped as a new holding last year was a dividend paying insurance company. This is me going further up the food chain to have some boring stocks which would do hopefully reasonably well. And that was Legal and General. Is a stock that I purchased. Another one is in Vestec, that's timestamped for last June. And the third one called Tech Capital, which has got a timestamp on it as well. I bought that with a view to the share price was about 11 pence, having a value of about 20 pence. It's invested in about four or five different companies. And one of them's just IPO'd. So that's a bit of value being released there. So the IPO company that they've just been involved in is called Bellascura. So you can look that one up. That ticker is BEL. It's got a suitable ticker symbol there. So that's just me sharing a couple so I don't have to talk about it in the summer because I'm not going to be around in the summer because I'm going to be in the pub.
Hey!
I'm going to go and see my folks, Pete, before the end of this month for the first time since December 2019 because they've been shielding. So I'm absolutely buzzing, mate.
Great idea. Bellascura, is that listed on the UK market?
Just IPO'd, Pete. Just IPO'd. I know it sounds Italian, mate, but it just IPO'd on the 28th.
On the UK market?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And what's the ticker for Legal & General is LGEN, isn't it?
LGEN. Yeah.
LGEN, LGEN. And what's the ticker for Investec?
INVP.
INVP. Interesting. Cool. That's very good.
So that's just me just sharing a few bits and pieces there. I would say for people that are going to be going on holiday, that one of the things that they should do regarding the SharePad and ShareScope platforms is probably try and put all of their portfolios and tickers into a portfolio, and that means that they don't have to chase the RNSs every day when they're on holiday, and just open one screen and one screen only on SharePad that shows all their portfolio, whether there's any news come out for them, and what's happening with that share price. So you can look at that at 8:05 in the morning, or 5:08 in the morning, and then only look at it again in the evening when you're chilling out. So you don't have to waste your summer. You know, spend 5 minutes just looking at the markets, have a look, done nothing to do, go back to have your day.
Back to what I said about efficiency, is it?
Absolutely.
I've got no doubt that me using SharePad massively increases my efficiency, no doubt about it.
It frees you up, Pete, because I'm not planning to do much during the summer regarding Twitter and social media and so on and so forth. And of note regarding that, my very, very, very dear friend, Phil Oakley, who writes for the Investors Chronicle, put a tweet out this morning, and he was saying, you know what, folks, I'm having some time out. I'm going to be on my bike driving around Norfolk and Surrey and so on and so forth. I'm just going to take some time out. So that's what I'm going to be doing going forward. So Phil, if you're listening to this podcast, mate, enjoy your time out and your bike ride. Stay safe, wear a helmet, and enjoy the scenery, hopefully. Do some mindfulness and just chill out. Enjoy your life, mate.
Yeah, so funny, because I saw the tweet. I thought he was cycling.
No, he is cycling. He's just taking some time out. He's not writing for a little while. He's just going to be chilling out for a few weeks and cycling around.
Oh God! From what you said,
what do you mean?
He's not a motorbike guy, Pete.
He's not a motorbike guy. He loves his cycling, mate.
Oh God, that's a classic. Hey, mate. Before we go, I've got a lateral thinking one for you.
Oh my gosh!
And if you cannot answer it here, we'll just leave it in the air. Perhaps give the people the answer on the next one. Anyway, oh God, I've got to get this right. Right, it'd be like my comedy thing, yeah. Right. Okay. There's two people. They're both from the same family. They're both siblings. And they were born on the same day. But they're not twins. What's going on? I'll leave you that one, mate. I thought you'd like it.
Yeah. Thanks for that. I've just come up with adopted, but there you go.
Well, I thought that when I heard it. That's the sort of thing you think, and you think it is. It's stepfather or whatever, stepkids or something, but it's nothing like that. They're actually, they're sort of blood related. It's amazing. Mate, we'll leave it for TPI 51.
Listen, ladies and gents, we thank you for putting up with us, and thank you for all this. We're very, very random. You know, we're two guys sitting in a pub having a conversation. So thank you for putting up with us. This is our 50th one. We really hope you enjoy it. Whichever platform you're on, please subscribe. If you enjoyed this, please share it with your friends, family, and other people that are interested in investing. And we look forward to hearing from you regarding the feedback, because you keep giving us fantastic feedback and you keep telling us what to do and how to change things. We keep trying to improve things for you. So we shall keep on keeping on. And we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks' time. Until then, take care. God bless.
Thanks, people. Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.